Thank you, Harald Weltetil Jäger. The lawyer in that case is also on stage. So for the final round of discussions, he will be available to answer your questions as well. But there is a short intervention that we will be getting at this point.
I wanted to say on behalf of my part of the free software community that I think that Harald and Till deserve an enormous measure of thanks from the free software world for the work that they have done in this instance. It was never our view that the avoidance of litigation was an end in itself. And I think what Harald has done on behalf of his own rights and those of the programmers with whom he works is an enormous benefit to programmers around the world. I think that the demonstration that people can protect freedom individually is of enormous importance. I think what Till has done in providing a German demonstration of the legality and enforceability of the license here is of great importance in globalizing the free software movement. We are now, I think, clear in the two most significant markets on Earth that this license model works and is strong. I think this is an enormous achievement for which they deserve what history will award them, which is the special recognition of having been first to the top of the mountain that they decided to climb. I personally want to pay my respects to them, and I think we should all do the same.
Well, thank you very much, Iben Moglen, but none of this would be possible if the Free Software Foundation wasn't the one who created this license. I mean, this is just, I guess it's the Free Software Foundation is the one you should thank to, not us. We just, you know, did what was within the license.
Thank you, Iben, for your congratulations. Perhaps I have two or three remarks to this case. First of it was Harald who has taken the risk. This one single person, as you have mentioned, so even one person can enforce a license against a company. So this is not impossible, as far as I can say, for Germany. Second point is, perhaps you can say, what is an enforcement in Germany? We have a lot of other different countries. So what about them? Perhaps it's important to know that we have an indirect enforcement in other countries. We have companies who gave a declaration to cease and desist for all over the world, and we had copyright GPL violations in other countries like Taiwan. So of course we can't sue them in Taiwan, but what we did, we enforced the GPL for the people who are selling the products in Germany. So we have an indirect effect because they are going to the firms, to the companies who made the product, said, oh, where's the source code? We have to enforce it in this way. I think this is an important point. And the third I want to say is the court in Munich has confirmed this decision. And we will have perhaps next week the grounds about it, and this will be published on our IFROS website, so you will find it for information. Thank you.
So IFROS again. Yes, please. IFROS is the Institute for Legal Questions of Free and Open Source Software. Now, are there any immediate questions? Is that a question? Oh, there. Yes, please.
Is the micro on? Yes. First, I want to say I greatly appreciate what you have done for the GPL enforcement, but I want to point out that your approach has a very weak point. As far as I'm aware, last year the U.S. Supreme Court upheld a decision that by contract, the buyer, the vendor of some equipment, is able to exclude the right to reverse engineer its product. So the crucial point in your approach is to first reverse engineer the code and then look if it contains some copyright infringement. If you first have to accept a contract that tells you you are not allowed to reverse engineer this product, you are out of the game. And I'm thinking we should be very careful looking at the WIPO so that we don't get a very wonderful new treaty providing us with the not right to reverse engineer our products. And I think the situation in the US, I would like to ask even Moglen how it is now, considered from this point, is a starting point for the industry to gain some instrument again, GPL enforcement, for example. And how could we deal with this problem?
This is a good point. We have actually reverse engineering is not allowed in Germany. So your question is how you can do it. There are two possibilities. Sometimes the violation is such clear you need no proof. But there are cases you have only the object code and you need real reverse engineering. I can speak only for the German legal system. Our law allows you, if you have a strong hint that there could be a violation, then the court will give you the right to make the reverse engineering. But of course, you're right, we have to take attention on this point. That's true.
I'm not a lawyer, but if the company or the vendor who sells you the device doesn't actually have the copyright on what he's selling you, how can he put a contract on the work which he doesn't have a copyright on, which bans you from reverse engineering? So wouldn't that contract be invalid if he isn't even a copyright holder?
As far as I understood the U.S. Supreme Court decision, the contract would preempt the copyright law. Is it right?
I'm unable to comment.
Just a short comment. The European Software Copyright Directive actually explicitly... not in the US, actually. But in the US, I think it's also one of the fair uses. And most definitely in this kind of case, it would fall most definitely on the scope of fair use.
I would really like to ask Ivan to comment on the situation in the United States.
We'll assume for these purposes that the current state of play is that contractual limitations on reverse engineering are enforceable. We assume at the foundation in the ordinary course of work that there is certain certain activities, including but not limited to reverse engineering work, which should be done outside the boundaries of the United States. I also should say that from our point of view, reverse engineering and compliance activity is primarily devoted to discovering that we are for sure having jurisdiction in a particular enforcement situation. So reverse engineering is largely limited to running strings on images in order to ascertain that it is our particular program that is involved. Where we are unable to assure ourselves that we are the copyright holder, we prefer to use alternate measures to discover or to prove violations beyond reverse engineering, and there are such measures. I should also point out that in the particular case that's at stake here, in the situation in which Cisco acquired Linksys, which acquired its GPL violation from an upstream supplier, we would not have had to use reverse engineering in order to ascertain that there was a violation. All parties, including the ultimate GPL violator, Broadcom, the author of the 802.11 chipset involved, which had sold the chipset and the software set to Linksys, all parties, including Broadcom, were perfectly happy to acknowledge the violation. Harald is correct that it took us 4 months to do what we did, but it would be right to say, as he, I think, suggested, that this was in some measure due to our delay. And I want to speak just for a moment to the reason why. I said this morning that the goal of destroying spectrum allocation is an intrinsic part of freedom. From our point of view, the single most important aspect in the 802.11 enforcement cases was to get all of the chipset manufacturers to come on in and talk to us about some larger issues. From our point of view, the infringement situation in the Linksys devices was a stick with which to beat the chipset manufacturers into a larger conversation involving matters of regulatory policy in the United States and elsewhere in the world. Harald is correct in suggesting that no particular software author ought to wait for that conversation to complete itself before enforcing his rights and protecting freedom. And that's why I so firmly welcomed his enforcement activity. But there was more at stake in those 4 months than just the enforcement of the GPL on a particular device. All parties agreed that there had been noncompliance with the license. Some parties in the chain believed that they were required to violate the license because issuing source code of software-controlled radios would cause them other legal difficulties with regulatory organizations in the United States, in Europe, and in Japan. We went slow because I agreed with them. They were in danger of regulatory difficulty. Software freedom with respect to software-controlled radio raises enormous difficulties for the manufacturers of radio-controlled or controlling devices. What the Foundation wanted was to get everybody to the table to begin a conversation. And their belief that they had no choice but either to violate copyright law or to run the risk of being punished for regulatory violations was the hook to make that conversation happen. The conversation continues to go on. The free software community and the makers of wireless devices are in what I would characterize as highly productive negotiations to do something together about the regulatory climate in which we all must work. In addition, Harald and Till have pointed out to them that in the meantime, they'd better obey the license. I consider that to be useful heat applied to the soles of the feet of people who need to keep feeling it. As long as they believe that they can violate copyright and stay out of trouble with the regulators, that's what they'll do. If the authors of free software in the wireless area make clear to them that infringing copyright is not a suitable shelter, then they must confront the regulatory issues. And together, the free world and the hardware manufacturers will make big progress. I think that's what's going on in the story we are seeing. It is important for the free software authors to continue to make the hardware companies play by the rules, and it is important that a larger industrial negotiation continue to go on. That's what will ultimately force the regulators to back off, and we will wind up with more software-controlled radio modifiable by its users. That will help us with spectrum issues around the world. The GPL violation is the place that the avalanche starts. But trust me, the snow has not finished falling yet.
So we're beyond the time set for the end of this panel. There is no panel after ours, but the dinner break. So if you're willing to spend some of your time of your dinner break, we can also continue the discussion. Are there any other statements, questions, suggestions for strategic moves?
May I make one question? I'm Ville Oksanen, Electronic Frontier of Finland. And I'm also just back from Geneva, and I'd like to actually still make a question to Mrs. Lang. Have WIPO ever considered having something about open source licensing, as you have just heard that open source licensing is actually a very useful tool for also intellectual property holders, so why not also market it through WIPO, and what actually happened to a workshop which was actually planned on this topic and was later suddenly cancelled? because as far as I know, one workshop about this topic was actually once even on the list for WIPO.
Yeah. Well, when we were invited to this conference, one of the items in the description of the panel was to conclude where the future of digital common was, and I am confident to say that is in intellectual property and copyright. I agree with Harald when he's saying that he's anti-copyright, he's not pro-copyright, but he respects the copyright principles, and in the case of open source software, I mean, when we are talking about giving for free or authorize the free utilization of computer programs, we are talking about the existence of certain rights, the acceptance of certain intellectual property rights. When you say you can build on my software a derivative work or a derivative software or computer program, we're recognizing that there is an originating work that is protected. When you are saying you can distribute, you can reproduce, you can do whatever you want with my software, you are using as a basis the copyright protection, the copyright principles. So, I mean, as a matter of fact, I mean, when we are promoting the protection of copyright in different regions of the world, one of the things or one of the alternatives we mention is the case of open source. Isn't the case, I can mention in this case also, the alternative of the Creative Commons license. When we are talking about, for instance, a free license to do whatever with a literary work or an artistic work, we are also talking about the existence of copyright. Everything is based, in this case, in copyright. You are receiving the authorization from somebody to do whatever you want with the work. When we talk about different types of licensing, we also refer to the case of the Creative Commons license. In fact, I mean, a few months ago, we received the visit of a representative of the Creative Commons movement to see or to explore different ways of promoting this specific system. So we don't exclude, I mean, we don't promote open source software as the only way of having or exploiting the software. What we do is present the alternative, the different alternatives that are given today. That's it. The second question was about, did you refer to it?
You had once planned, as far as I know, a workshop about open source and free software licenses, but it was cancelled for some reason, and yeah. I'd actually like to know why it was cancelled.
Yeah, I was talking this morning with somebody about it. I think that it was a lot of publicity around it. I know that, first of all, there was somebody from WIPO, a director from WIPO, who expressed his support for the organization of this conference. And there were many discussions and the intervention of certain member states. But the idea is that we are not opposed to discuss this issue. And I think that sooner or later it will come. For many reasons, this conference wasn't organized last year, but I think that sooner or later, I cannot fix a date, set a date now, or say a date now, but sooner or later, these discussions on this issue will be held in WIPO and other international fora, if this is the need.
This is a wonderful, promising statement for the future, and if there is no urgent need, I don't see. Yes, there is one.
Yeah,
please.
Gary, you're telling us that it's the countries that set the agenda.
Yeah.
However, I think it was in your second slide, we get to find out that WIPO consists of about 900 people who have at their disposal the better part of $1 billion to play with in order to promote the protection of intellectual property rights. And not to promote the balance in intellectual property rights. So what does it take? How can we ever expect for WIPO to actually, or even the country's delegates to WIPO, when they get this idea, hey, we're here to promote the protection of intellectual property rights and extend their benefits to all, when these benefits are not even demonstrated, how we can ever expect anything balanced to ever come out of this situation? Because copyright and patents are a bargain, but at this bargaining table, there's only one side present.
Perhaps I can add one point. I think you are right. One expression of this kind of viewing things is a classical copyright law. But one expression is a three-step test. A three-step test is not for balancing. It's to look how can we protect rights and what kind of limitations are perhaps necessary, but perhaps is there outside the official agenda in inside of the WIPO, is there a discussion to have a better balance in the future?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, referring to the number of staff that you mentioned, I will look at not the number of staff, but the number of countries that are members of WIPO. And when you say, I mean, how you spend the amount of money that you have fixed for the biennium 2004 and 2005, I must tell you that perhaps, I mean, it's a very low figure, or I mean, it's not a sufficient amount if you consider that we are covering the activities for economic development in five regions of the world. We are talking about the Asian region, African region, Latin American region, Asian region, African region, Latin American region, Arab region, and the CIS countries and countries of certain countries of Europe and Asia. We are not covering also.
If I may point out, the Free Software Foundation and the Free Software Community does pretty much the same on a much, much lower budget.
Excuse me?
The Free Software Community does the same in all five regions of the world and on a much lower budget. And taking what I would see as a much better balanced approach.
Well, I must clarify that we are not only working in the field of open source. I mean, we are only copyright protection. We cover also activities regarding patents and trademarks and plant varieties also. So different branches of intellectual property. But I think that the main point of your remarks is regarding the balance. I mean, how to strike the balance. I invite you to read the preamble of the WCT and WPPT, the WIPO Internet Treaties. Both of them, in the preamble, refer to the necessity of striking a balance between the interest of the stakeholders and the public interest. And I think that, well, perhaps regarding what you say, I think that it's a question of how you see things. I mean, from the active point of view, if you say, well, three-step test is just, I mean, the measure to see where the door is open or when there is a door open for specific exceptions. But, well, let's see from the other point of view. I mean, it's a certain benefit. Oh, there are certain benefits for beneficiaries, libraries, educational institutions, well, visually impaired people, if you want to mention, that are included, not explicitly, but implicitly in these limitations and exceptions. One thing that I can cite as an example is the directive, the InfoSoc directive, that took all the provisions of WCT and WPPT. If you read this directive in Article 6, 4th, paragraph 4, there is specifically an indication for member states to attend to this balance, to take into consideration this balance between the limitations and exceptions and, for instance, the utilization of or the protection of technological measure of protections. So what I can say is that, I mean, this is something really important for us when we are promoting copyright protection and public interest or interests that are a priority all are also a matter of concern.
Thank you to Kiri Lang, to Harald Welte, and to Till Jäger.